I was talking about it last night. It was something that just went out of control. My original plan was obviously just to buy my dad a globe. I didn't see that that would be an issue. I knew his birthday was coming up and I had been looking around for a while. And I knew there were some reproduction globes that were quite pretty, but crazily expensive. I'd seen a few ideas of antique globes, but again, they were really expensive. And I don't really see the point in having an old map if you're buying a new globe. If you're buying an old antique, fine. I literally gave myself 3 months and a few thousand pounds to do it. It took the best part of 2 years and dramatically more than that, closer to £200,000 before I'd actually completed one globe. Probably about 3 or 4 months in, I'd made the decision to turn it into a company.
I suspect, Peter, that making a world in a spherical form is not as simple as it looks. What were some of those challenges that you came up against when trying to work out how to actually make a globe?
Everything in spheres is just ridiculously challenging. All your errors seem to be multiplied by pi. Everything about it is difficult. I suppose the most difficult thing was applying a flat piece of paper and stretching it to form a shape over a sphere. And I did that hundreds of times. I used to go to the local tip once a week, throwing away the globes I'd made. You have to learn to use your hands so delicately. And that's not something I guess I'd done probably ever, but I certainly hadn't done it for years and years.
Well, what was that change like, Peter? Because you used to work in a bowling alley, is that right?
Yeah, I set up a little bowling alley in Bloomsbury in 2005. And that was kind of helping a friend out to do it. And then I somehow got press ganged into running it for 3 years. So I've always really changed careers. I think I kind of, in my 20s, I did lots of different jobs, didn't really enjoy many of them. And then I was fortunate enough to get a job in television where I worked for about 8 years. And then I was even more fortunate enough to be made redundant from television, which 15 years ago, they had very good redundancy packages. So I then was able to become self-employed, which to me was always my goal in life, to be self-employed. So I did a bit of property developing, and then because I was managing my own time, I was able to help out with the bowling alley. But then going into this was just, I was able to do it, but there were no plans or anything. It just somehow happened.
Well, on that, Peter, I mean, were you really into atlases as a child? Or has that love come from making globes?
As a child, I would sit in my dad's kind of study and I would read all the books on science and nature and all the encyclopedias and atlases. I never read novels. I always was obsessed with the world.
Do you find that you are a little bit more obsessed with maps in particular now?
Definitely, yeah. Partly also because so many of our customers are really obsessed with maps and have amazing collections of maps or prints of maps. And so it's fun to find out more about it.
Peter Bellaby is my guest. He's the founder and also a globe maker with Bellaby & Co. Globe Makers, which are based in London and are the makers of bespoke globes. Peter, what kind of globes do you create and what materials do you tend to use in your workshop?
We make terrestrial and celestial globes. With terrestrial globes, they're all bang up to date. We're lucky with the advances in printing, so we can actually make everything as current maps. So we literally edit things up to date. So in fact, we have political leaders on some of the globes. So we'll be making a few changes. The main globe we make is a terrestrial globe. When I started this, I was somewhat obsessed with using old materials, using plaster of Paris, using wood, using metal. But now we use all modern materials. So we use GRP, which is fiberglass, for most of the globes. Some of them are made of solid resin. And then what we're actually making is a printed globe. So we print the map to begin with, so that it has all the detail on, and once that's applied to the globe, that becomes a printed globe. Or once it's applied to the sphere, that becomes a printed globe.
How many globe makers are left in the world? You know, is this sort of an old world skill these days?
I mean, when I started, I guess there was one other company making reproduction globes, so making globes from the 17th, 18th century. And I think the one thing that was really important to me when I set up was the aesthetic of the globe. That's what I wanted to produce, and that's what we are obsessed about. And that's why the painting of a globe is so important. And for the larger globes, it takes over a week for the painters to add in all the colour to the globes.
Peter, that's one of the more fascinating things about a globe or a map, isn't it? Is that it can tell you a bit of history, you know, take you to a certain place in time when, you know, a country or a place may have been called something different. Or if someone asks for something that they want Byron Bay on a globe, and to have that sort of magnified a little bit because it's important to them, that's the kind of requests that you get.
To me, that's the most important thing we do, because it adds such a great deal of personalization to a globe. It's really rare these days that you buy something and you're invested in it and you're talking about it sort of every day in as it's being made. You usually just buy something, and however much people talk about craftsmanship and bespoke and individual, on the whole, most things are kind of off the rack.
I'm Rhianna Patrick, and this is ABC Local Radio, and Peter Bellaby is my guest. He's a globe maker for Bellaby & Co. Globe Makers, which are based in London. Peter, how many globes do you make a year?
We this year will make just under 500. We're a small company. In time, that will push up to about 1,000. But because it's a handmade thing, we want to keep it small. There's no desire to be making 10,000. It's a really nice thing that we can keep it quite exclusive.
Well, Peter, tell me about your workshop. I mean, what skills do you need to have in your staff, and how is your workshop set up in how you make a globe from start to finish?
I mean, the skills you need are really things you learn as you come here. I mean, we're employing at the moment, and we actually found it quite difficult employing people at the beginning. We just decided in the end it's much easier if we ask people to come in for half a day and give them a blank sphere and give them some bits of map, which are called gauze, and ask them to have a go. And you kind of learn quite a lot about someone's character when they're doing that, because the things you really need in this is manual dexterity, an incredible amount of patience. One of the things we do at work, I mean, we have a really nice studio, and we do yoga twice a week, because controlling your movements is one of the most important thing when you're making a globe, because you literally have to wet the piece of paper and then you have to shape it around the sphere. And if you do any fast movements, it will just tear. We don't have any sort of crazy specialist tools. It's mainly people will come in and they'll spend 6 to 8 months making a globe every single day to learn how to do it. It's very much just retraining your body and your mind to be able to do it. The studio itself is an amazing studio. I was very lucky to get it in 2010. It's just off the very cute Stoke Newington Church Street in North London, and it's 20 meters square on two levels, and it's fantastic. It has a full window, north and south facing, bathed in light, well, when the sun decides to come out in the UK. A lot of things we do, there isn't a tool to actually do it with, so there are lots of little patterns and jigs that we've had to make over the years to be able to construct both the stands and to help with globe making. Because you can imagine when you start with a sphere and you, for instance, find the North Pole, or you decide where you're going to have the North Pole, which we do by balancing the sphere actually in water. But then to find the South Pole from that, just the whole measuring process, it takes about half an hour to 40 minutes to find the South Pole. It's quite a complicated process. So we've had to have lots of jigs made up to allow us to do that.
How satisfying is it once you make up a jig for something that you've been racking your brain over and to see it work? I mean, is there a level of satisfaction that comes with that?
Yeah, it's amazing. The other thing is that because it's so much fun, the actual industry, and because it's such an unusual industry, I will often go to people who I will subcontract and ask them help, and they will really buy into it. I mean, and they will help with the design and they will come up with an amazing product. I recently had to make a gearing for the largest globe we do, which is a Churchill, and we've commissioned to make one in the traditional style. A lot of our globes We've designed an amazing system where they sit on roller bearings, so you can spin them in any direction. This one is an old school one, which sits in an axle and has a solid brass meridian around it. So the meridian is 30 kilograms. The globe itself is 30 kilograms. And so I had to have some gearing underneath to allow the meridian to move freely. I end up going, funnily enough, up to Newport Pagnell near Aston Martin and finding the people who manufacture pieces for Aston Martin and for the Formula One Red Bull teams. And they end up making me these amazing pieces of metal that have the running gear to allow the whole meridian to move. People really love being involved in it because it is so unusual. You can imagine often with jobs, things can be a bit run of the mill. But with ours, everything is usually one-off and it's usually quite complicated and difficult to work out. And that kind of challenges people and they usually rise to it and they usually enjoy it.
I'd forgotten that there's a few ways that a globe can work, Peter, and you've just reminded me of both of those. I mean, that must also come into when you get a request from a customer as well of how they want that globe to move and the way that they want to use it too.
Yeah, I mean, in the war, the American Army, in World War II, the American Army, one of the generals decided to make a couple of globes for Churchill and Roosevelt. And they had this idea of sitting them on three bearings, so they'd always sit perfectly, and they could be moved in any direction, which is an amazing idea. The ones they made in 1942 probably lasted about 2 weeks before the rubber bearings they used started to degrade and then leave black streaks all over the globe. Luckily, since then, someone invented an amazing system called either ball racers or ball transfer units. You often will see them in industry placed every square foot and someone will slide along a heavy cardboard box and it will go across these runners. That's what we use in the bases of our globes. And it means you're so much more involved with it. It will move in any direction. You can lift it up. And we kind of started this about 5 years ago. It's the thing that people come to us for because it's such an interesting way of interacting with a globe. Traditionally, the globe has just spun on an axis and it just spins on one plane and looks stunningly beautiful, as all globes do. But when you have one on your desk and you're able to move it in any direction, it just makes the world of difference.
Peter, you mentioned before that the skill set that you need to make a globe is one where it's a little bit of trial and error and seeing if the person fits with making a globe. You know, in terms of the staff that you have attracted, where have they come from? You know, what were they doing previously before they found that they had a skill in globe making?
They've come from varied backgrounds. There are several artists, certainly for the painting side, but for the actual globe making, one of them has a design background, or at least college. He came straight out of college. One of them was at art college, and the other one is Italian. He did restoration in Venice for his degree. So it's the mind of someone that we are interested in more than their skill set from college or their school education. It could be anyone. It really could be anyone. When we put out an advert for people, we get hundreds and hundreds of applications. And often I wish I could see all of them and get all of them to come in and just actually have a go, because ultimately that is the thing that's important. And the difference between someone who is going to work out and someone who isn't going to work out is so obvious within 4 hours. It's incredible.
Have you had a request that you've thought has been quite weird, but you've found it also quite interesting and a bit of a challenge to make?
We were involved with a charity called the Elephant Family, and every so often they throw up a challenge for us. A couple of years ago in 2012 and again in 2013, we made some egg globes, and these were huge. They were 80 centimeters from pole to pole, and those were probably the longest globes to make that we've ever made. It's difficult enough making a spherical globe, but making one shaped as an egg is really difficult. I mean, we get asked odd things here and there. We're making one for an artist, Yinka Shonibar, at the moment, and that will be a globe which sits on the floor and has a mannequin coming out the top of it. So it's probably, I guess, a regular globe, but it's fun to be involved in these sorts of projects. We're always being asked to make new things, and as much as possible, we try and do it, because that obviously makes the job so much more fun to be able to do one-offs.
And Peter, is there one that you would love to make that you haven't been asked to yet?
Not really. We kind of get asked to do the planets, and I'm not really into it at the moment. They're fine on a small scale, but as soon as they're more than about 20 centimetres in diameter, they're kind of just a block of colour. So no, we're really lucky, actually. We were commissioned by the Louvre earlier this year to remake a very old celestial globe from 1684. They still have the original copper plates, which we are printing from. I'm going over to Paris in about a week and a half to film the printing process. So that is really exciting. I mean, the copper plates are literally in pristine condition. They're about a meter in length and about 30 centimeters wide. And they were obviously all carved or etched. When you're etching, you do things backwards so that when you print it, it comes out correctly. And there's tons of writing on it. And so all this writing was done in reverse. So, I mean, I guess there were people back in the day who had that skill set. But each panel looks like it would have taken someone a year to make. They're so detailed. There are 26 plates in total. So there are 24, 12 for each hemisphere. Mm-hmm. And then on a globe, top and bottom, you have a circle piece, which is called a calotte. And so there are an extra two. So 26 in total. The thing about a celestial globe is it's a figment of a lot of people's imaginations from back in the day, and it doesn't really transpose itself to a modern map. So having the ultimate ancient celestial globe to use or to remake is going to be really exciting.
That must sort of take your excitement levels to a different place, being able to do something like that. And do you often get the chance to work with museums?
A little bit, not that much. We often get asked to work with fashion houses and people like that for one-off things. But no, I mean, museums, I guess if we made old school globes, they might ask us to reproduce those, but we don't. I'm more than excited to be commissioned by the Louvre. I guess I'm not really from an artist background, so it perhaps hasn't dawned on me, but I can't really imagine there are many commissions from many institutions that will beat this.